research. Are we live tonight? Is this a live program or is this a rebroadcast? Is this a live program? This is live? Oh, okay. Let me see. This is, yes, by God, it's Thursday, the 30th of September. Coming up in, let's see, it's 7 past the hour, so it'll be about 27 minutes. I'm going to play a piece of tape for you. You're not going to believe. Or not tape. I don't know why. That's because I'm from that generation. I'm going to play some audio for you. It was an interview that Anderson Cooper did, I think it was last night, with the Michigan Assistant Attorney General, Andrew Schiervel. I've never heard anything like this. This guy's the Assistant Attorney General of the state of Michigan. Rather than try to explain it, I just want you to hear it when we get to that. A lot of stuff to cover. Suicides all over the place. Gay kids that are being harassed by the Christians. I mean teenagers that are being harassed by the Christians to the point where they commit suicide. It's astonishing. At Fort Hood, Texas, soldiers at record pace committing suicide. Record number. What does it say here? Fort Hood officials are investigating a rash of suicides, including the apparent murder-suicide of a soldier and his wife. According to figures released yesterday, 20 suicides have been reported so far this year among soldiers stationed at Fort Hood. One place, Fort Hood. 20 soldiers have committed suicide. And on Sunday, 31-year-old Sergeant Michael Timothy Franklin and his wife, Jessianne Franklin, were found shot dead in their Fort Hood home. Army officials are investigating the death as a murder-suicide. Two soldiers died Saturday in apparently unrelated suicides, including a veteran of four tours in Iraq. Fourth soldier was found dead Friday. This is just madness. And the Republicans, the right-wingers in this country, want it to continue. They want more death. They want as much death as they can possibly generate. It's astonishing. And Joe from Temecula, California, sent me an email. Why the capitalists don't care. As you know, I've been ragging on these filthy, death-dealing capitalists now for several weeks, pretty specifically. Because I really do believe that we have to get to a post-capitalist economic social system, or that's the end of everything. If we are going to continue with a system that was never designed to advance the interests of the working class or the middle class, it was designed to advance the interests of the money class, the owner class. If we're ever going to get to the interests, the very lives of people who are not in that top 1.5%, then we are going to have to move beyond capitalism. It's just that simple. And you right-wingers who don't know what I'm talking about, don't email me. You have no idea how to articulate a response to that. Just shut up, okay? All of you, just shut up, you right-wing freaks. Anyway, Joe, regarding that, right, wrote, Mike, there's a reason why the capitalists are turning their backs on the American middle class. For one, the capitalists really do hate America. They hate everything about us. They hate our freedom. They hate our demand for safe working conditions. They hate our demand for safe food. They hate our demand for safe products. They hate our labor unions. They hate our demand for a living wage. They hate the minimum wage. They hate the environment laws. They hate us and want us all dead. As evidenced by their actions, such as poisoning our water, poisoning our air, and poisoning our food supply. Now, let me digress from Joe's email for a second. Every single Republican running is a paid whore, no offense to sex workers, of the capitalist class. Every single one of them. Okay? Back to Joe's letter. The only reason why the capitalists in America got along for a time was because they needed us. As was mentioned in the piece you read by Michael Payne, Henry Ford paid his workers enough to be able to afford to buy his Model T. For a time in this country, that was the logos of many of the capitalists. In the golden age of labor, in the 50s and 60s, corporations actually had to compete for the best labor by offering the best benefits, retirement, healthcare plans. All that is gone now. And contrary to what Michael Payne wrote, it will not be the end of the capitalists. It will be the end of the American middle class, as we are all reduced to corporate serfs. But it will not be the end of the capitalists. The reason why the capitalists are rejecting the American worker and insisting on cheaper wages coupled with deregulation is because, in their mind, they don't need us anymore. Sure, they used to depend on us consumers to buy their junk, not anymore. The current crop of capitalists are looking to the emerging middle classes in China and India and licking their chops. They see enough demand on the horizon to supplant the American consumer. What does that mean? Well, they think they don't need us anymore. They will continue to kick us to the curb as America continues on this death spiral of becoming a net exporter of raw materials and net importer of finished goods. The very definition of a third world country. We fought a revolution at one time in our history so that we could keep our own raw materials and produce our own finished goods. But the powers that be have figured a way around that one many years ago. Joe in Temecula, California. Clear evidence, I guess, of what Joe's talking about. Did you know that hiring, all of a sudden hiring is up? Job seekers are, there's all kinds of jobs. In 2009, in this one area, 500,000 jobs were added in October, November, and December. This October, November, December, it's going to be as many as 600,000 jobs. Now, they're all part-time, and they're all in the retail sales industry. You know who's hiring? Toys R Us, Best Buy, Target, Walmart, JCPenney's, Macy's, jobs. Now, the jobs will have no benefits. The jobs will have minimal, not minimum wage, but minimal wage, just whatever they can get away with. Did I mention Toys R Us? I think I did. 500 to 6,000 extra workers are going to be hired for Christmas. Shipping companies like UPS and FedEx. Now, come January 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, gone. Retail sales. Oh, damn. You know, that used to be a pretty good job. I remember when I was in high school, I got a job at a very exclusive men's shop in Toledo. I was telling Kathy about this the other day. I had to know the difference between about six different kinds of men's collars when people would come in to buy a white shirt, dress shirt. And back 1,000 years ago when I was in high school and worked at the company was B.R. Baker's in Toledo, and you could make a living wage there. Now, not me. I was just a kid. I was just a high school kid. I worked a couple hours after school and sometimes on Saturdays. But the sales clerks who worked there, who had been there, for some of them for 15 years, married, had kids, putting them through school. What did they do? They sold men's clothes. That's all they did. They sold clothing. I don't think that you can still do that in retail sales now. Oh, and by the way, speaking of the great big behemoth capitalist organizations, you hear McDonald's. Either this story is going to happen or it's not going to happen. Wall Street Journal says McDonald's has warned federal regulators it's going to drop its health insurance plan for nearly 30,000 hourly restaurant employees unless regulators waive a requirement in the new, you know, the Obamacare, right? And no sooner did that story get out and get chewed on than the Associated Press is reporting that McDonald's denies reports. It's considering dropping health care coverage for its employees. Who are you going to believe, McDonald's or McDonald's? We'll be right back.
And no one seems to care. We moved our plants to Haiti and now we have to move from there. They're clamoring for more than $1 a day from Malaysia to Mexico. At that rate, pretty soon there'll be no place for us to go. Bosses of the world, unite. Don't just sit there, fight, fight, fight. Don't tremble.
the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. By the way, Fort Hood, of course, is named after Confederate General John Bell Hood, who had his ass kicked severely here at the Battle of Atlanta by General W.T. Sherman. So General Hood, or the Fort Hood, is named after a traitor to the United States. Pretty Spider reminded me of that. Anyway, McDonald's. Yeah, McDonald's has decided that, like a lot of capitalist America has decided, even though they're paid prostitutes, no offense to sex workers, in the U.S. Congress, the Republicans and a couple of Democrats did everything they could to stop this health insurance changes from going through. It still went through. So they had to drop back and form a huddle and decide, okay, what are we going to do? And the prostitutes in the Congress, the Republicans, have informed the capitalists, well, there's no way we can repeal. We're going to talk repeal so we can get elected or reelected, but there's no way we can appeal until we get rid of the Kenyan dude, the Muslim, in the White House, because if we do repeal it, he'll just veto it. So even if we wound up with a big majority, you know, it has to be veto-proof, and that's almost impossible. So the capitalists had to come up with a way to get around this. A lot of companies are doing this now. They're saying, oh, well, we can't do it. Because, see, what a lot of these companies do, they don't have full health care coverage the way it used to be back in the day. For example, what I have. Now, I have mine through my union. And AFTRA, the union of which I'm a member, self-insures. Okay? So that means that of the enormous amount of money that comes in insurance premiums from us who are members, and the payments go in from the companies that hire us, which puts me in a kind of unusual position since I am both employer and employee. I get to pay both, but that's just the price of doing business in America. But my point is, the big corporations that are not self-insured, they have insurance programs now that have high deductibles. They have low caps on what they're offering. A lifetime caps may be $10,000. That's all you're going to get. If you work here, boy, that's all you're going to get. Now, the reasoning behind a lot of this is, well, the people that they hire are either young people who, for the most part, don't get major diseases, or now they're retirees who are already on Social Security, you see? So McDonald's, in order to, and that's just one of the capitalist organizations that are trying to figure out, well, how do we kick this Obama administration in the ass for doing this? How do we do this? How do we do this? Our whores in Congress can't repeal it. So what are we going to do? So they come up with this. They say, well, the new law says that certain criteria must be met for the workers, certain insurance, it has to be at a certain level. It has to cover certain things. So I know, here's what we'll do. We'll tell the federal government, we can't do it. So we're going to drop the insurance. Now, the irony of McDonald's is that this is a corporation that is directly responsible for sickness, you know, for diabetes, for all kinds of diseases that are connected to gross obesity, arthritis, heart disease, diabetes, early onset Alzheimer's, whatever it is. McDonald's is one of the poisonous companies, one of the most poisonous, and has been for half a century. And God forgive me, I used to work for them. I did when I was a senior in high school. Oh, my God. A junior in high school. I worked for McDonald's, 90 cents an hour. And it was a good way to eat. I mean, you know, I come from a very poor family, and I got the job at McDonald's because I could eat free. Yeah, back then you could eat free. And but anyway, I digress. So McDonald's Corporation, one of the companies in the United States, one of the capitalist organizations in the United States, most responsible for this epidemic of childhood obesity and adult obesity, childhood high blood pressure, Jesus Christ, childhood diabetes. So now, as they continue to pump this poisonous filth into the bloodstream of America, now they're saying, guess what? We don't think we can insure our workers the way the federal government says we have to under Obamacare. Now, that's what the Wall Street Journal reported today. It's in today's Wall Street Journal. And as soon as it came out, I guess it came out Wednesday, McDonald's denies the report. The company said in a statement, today it has been speaking with federal agencies to try to understand the law. They said, we're not really considering that. No. Because, see, part of the law makes that illegal. You sons of bitches. You dirty capitalist pigs. All right, stick around. When we come back, I want you to hear the Assistant Attorney General of the great state of Michigan, a teabagger, Christian, freak Republican who, well, how to put it, hates gays. And I think the reason he hates gay folk is because, well, maybe because the reason a lot of these ardent homophobes get out there, because maybe he's so deeply closeted, he's really hating himself. But wait to hear, this is going to be the longest bit of audio I think I've ever played on this program. Stick around.
White shed, you will find bigger piggies staring up the dead.
Welcome back. It is 25 before the hour. I tell you what, I'm going to let this wait till next hour because Obama is speaking at a sold-out Democratic National Committee event in Washington, D.C., and some of this sounds pretty good. Let's take some of this, Kathy. Go ahead. Take a line.
Same policies that left our economy in a shambles and the middle class struggling year after year, that those folks might all ride back into power. That's the conventional wisdom in Washington.
He's talking about the Republicans.
We cannot let that happen. We cannot sit this out. We can't let this country fall backwards. The stakes are too high. We have to move this country forward for you and your future. So there better not be an enthusiasm gap, people. Not now.
Uh-oh, they're losing the picture.
Speaking tonight to Generation 44.
Okay.
Which is the part...
Okay, yeah, Obama is finally kicking ass and taking names where it concerns the Republicans. Have we got time to do this? We don't have time to do it? You think, all right, let's see what, because I would like to hear some more of this. I doubt, no, Larry King's not going to, he's talking about Tony Curtis. Jesus, God, who I love, I really like Tony Curtis, but, I mean, come on, man, damn. no, we're not going to be able to get it. All right, I want to start this. If we have to, we'll stop it during when we have to go to commercial break. Here's the setup. Michigan Assistant Attorney General is a guy named Andrew Chervell. And he's taken up an unlikely target, the student body president at the University of Michigan, where this freak graduated. He's got a blog out he started called the Chris Armstrong Watch. That's what the president of the University of Michigan student body's name is, Chris Armstrong. He was on Anderson Cooper 360 last night, and I want you to hear this. Go ahead, start it.
Andrew, I want to go over some of the stuff that you have on your blog. There's a picture of Chris Armstrong with a Nazi swastika near his face. There's another with the words racist, elitist, liar scrawled on his face. You accuse him at one point of being Satan's representative on the student assembly. I got to ask you, I mean, you're a state official. This is a college student. What are you doing?
Well, Anderson, basically, if you've been involved in political campaigns before, you know, all sorts of stuff happens, and this is just another tactic bringing awareness to what Chris really stands for.
This is not some national figure. This is a guy who's running a student council.
Well Anderson, as a private citizen and as a University of Michigan alum, I care because this is my university. And I wasn't the only first person to criticize Chris. In fact, long before I started the blog, a couple of weeks before that, the Alliance Defense Fund, a well-known legal Christian Foundation put out an alert about Chris. So I'm not the only person that has criticized Chris, and I'm not the first person to criticize Chris.
But you are the only person. You are the only person running this blog, which is putting Nazi swastikas on this guy. You're a grown adult. Does that seem appropriate to you?
Like I said, this is a political campaign. This is nothing personal against Chris. I don't know Chris.
It's nothing personal. You're outside his house. You're videotaping his house. You're shouting him down at public events. You're calling him Satan's representative on the student council. You're attacking his parents, his friends' parents. I mean, you can't say it's not personal.
Well, Chris, in any political campaign, you have to raise awareness and issues, and that's one way of doing it is by protesting.
Well, I mean, of course you're free to express whatever you want, but I mean, I guess in terms of sheer decency, do you really think for an assistant attorney general targeting some college student because he's gay is appropriate?
Well, again, I am doing this as a private citizen, off work time, as a University of Michigan alum. We're quibbling over tactics. We're not quibbling over substance. The substance of the matter is, Anderson, Chris Armstrong is a radical homosexual activist who got elected, partly funded by the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund, to promote a very deeply radical agenda at the University of Michigan.
Well, and his biggest issues were extending the hours of the cafeteria and lowering tuition, as well as some gender housing.
No, that's not correct.
Oh, my God.
Anderson, his biggest issue is gender-neutral housing. What we're talking about is anybody, any man or woman wanting to choose to live together. That's a radical redefinition of gender norms.
You say this is all just a political campaign, though. A, you're not running for any political campaign, nor is he. He's already the student council president. He's not some national figure, and you're putting swastikas on his face and saying he's Satan's representative. That seems like below-the-belt campaigning. I don't know what campaigns you're used to being involved with, but don't you think that is beyond the pale?
Well, I don't think it's beyond the pale. Like I said, I sense a lot of anger in your voice, Anderson, and I don't understand where that's coming from. As an astute observer of political campaigns, you know, for many years, you know that these kind of tactics are, you know, part for the course.
It appears, though, that you're obsessed with this young gay man. I mean, I've read all your blog postings. You're like perusing his Facebook, his friends' Facebook pages. You're making completely unwarranted accusations, unproven accusations.
It's incredible.
Based on what you're gleaning from his Facebook pages.
Excuse me, Anderson, who said they were unwarranted and not true? Chris has never come out and denied anything. There's a reason why he isn't giving interviews. Because he can't defend what's on the blog. I stand by what's on the blog. I've gotten stuff from other third-party sources.
You stand by that he's Satan's representative on the student council. You stand by that.
excuse me, Anderson, that isn't on the blog. That's taken from another posting somewhere on the internet. I may have put out.
So you don't stand by that?
That's my opinion.
Okay, you stand by it. Your boss, the Attorney General of Michigan, Mike Cox, put out a statement saying that while he recognizes your right to express your opinions, your, quote, immaturity and lack of judgment outside the office are clear. Do you worry at all that your boss thinks you're immature and lack judgment?
Anderson, I agreed to do this interview by stating that I wouldn't make any comments regarding my employment.
I was reading the criteria the state of Michigan uses to identify someone who's a cyberbully. And they say a cyberbully is someone who uses technology to harass, embarrass, intimidate, or stalk someone else. And it lists the types of content a cyberbully may send, including vulgar and argumentative messages, cruel, offensive, and insulting remarks. Under that definition, aren't you a cyberbully?
No, absolutely not. And that's a total mischaracterization from the local news reporter, Ross Jones, that did the piece on me, who was very biased.
I don't know who that is. I don't know who that is. I've read I read the state's definition of what a cyberbully is. There's a pamphlet that the state hands out, and that's the definition, and it seems to apply to you.
Well, I don't meet the definition. I've never contacted Chris. I've never spoken to him.
You followed him around and you stood outside his house and videotaped.
I do not follow him around. I protest with a sign. That's exercising my First Amendment rights, Anderson. That's not following anybody around. I don't live anywhere near to Ann Arbor. I've been down there maybe three or four times since I started the blog.
Have you ever been to his house and hung outside his house and videotaped?
I've protested outside of his house, yes.
Do you consider yourself a bigot?
Absolutely not. I'm a Christian citizen exercising my First Amendment rights. I have no problem with the fact that Chris is homosexual. I have a problem with the fact that he is advancing a very radical agenda.
I bring up the bigot question because, you know, Merriam-Webster's dictionary defines bigot as a, quote, person obstinately or intolerantly devoted to his or her opinion and prejudices, also one who regards or treats the member of a group with hatred or intolerance. I mean, labeling the student a Nazi, seeing his representative, picketing his house, it certainly makes you appear intolerant at the very least. Seems like you hate this guy because he's gay.
No, well, Anderson, that's your spin on it. The real bigot here is Chris Armstrong. I don't have any hate in my body at all. I recognize that Chris is a child of God. However, that just because he's homosexual doesn't mean he gets a free pass and we can't criticize him. That does not make you a bigot to criticize somebody or somebody's agenda. He's a political figure, Anderson.
You're expected, though, to uphold the laws equally and impartially for all Michigan residents. I mean, in your work, how can you do that if you openly display, you know, attitudes toward this guy like this? If you're calling this guy a Nazi, if you're calling this guy, you know, Satan's representative on the student council? I mean, would a gay person feel comfortable being defended by you?
Anderson, I stated that I wouldn't talk about any aspects of my employment. I have a right as an alum and as a private citizen to criticize him in my after-hours work.
No one's questioning your right to do it. It's just, I guess, but you're questioning your judgment. Andrew Servilla, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. You did squeeze it in. Thank you, Catherine. All right. Now, this guy that you just heard, Michigan Assistant Attorney General Andrew Chervell, I think his problem is that the guy he's going after, Chris Armstrong, openly gay president of the University of Michigan Student Council, won't sleep with Andrew. Andrew wants to have sex with him. That's what's going on here. The Michigan Assistant Attorney General wants to have sex with Chris Armstrong. And Chris has been giving him the finger, you know, telling him no, forget about it. But look, can you believe this? This is the Assistant Attorney General of the state of Michigan doing this to a student. I'm a Christian, he says. Of course, that interview must have been very difficult for Anderson Cooper. We'll be right back.
The siren of the ambulance, the death pan of the cops, shot to mark the outline where the boy first dropped. Beware the Holy Trinity, church and state and law. For every death, the virus gets more deadly than before. Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love who you want. Love in times like these. Homophobia, the worst disease.
Yeah. Right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. Recent that piece. The interview Anderson Cooper had with this psycho, I just wonder how soon before he gets fired. I don't know if the Assistant Attorney General is an elected position. I have no idea. But here's another white male who's insane, who's just losing his mind over the radical fill-in-the-blank agenda. Is it the radical homosexual agenda, the radical black agenda, the radical Mexican agenda, the radical Jewish agenda, the radical liberal agenda? I mean, white America truly has lost its mind. That's the title of a piece written by, at Village Voice, Stephen Thrasher. Good piece. But the reason this is important, the Rutgers University student who committed suicide after he was harassed, cyber harassed, by a couple of students who thought it'd be great fun to put a live video feed, an internet feed, in the students' room, the room that was shared by a guy who released this live video stream of the male student having sex with another friend, with a friend, another male, and I mean, this is so. The next day, the Rutgers student, and I understand from all the news reports, a brilliant violinist, a great student, jumped off the George Washington Bridge and committed suicide. And then we had the two high school kids. One in where was it? One in was it Indiana? One in Kentucky. High school kids. And remember a couple of weeks ago when I told you that the I think it's the Focus on the Family organization. They are lobbying against a bill that would include. I think I've got this right. That would include in the list of things that are defined as bullying is going after somebody because of their sexual orientation. We're talking about high school here, and the this crazy group of Christian psychopaths said that bullying somebody because he's homosexual, that infringes on our freedom of speech. These son of a bitches need to be taken out and dismissed. You know what I'm saying? I mean, this is unbelievable. But this is how far it's come. I can remember, 15, 20 years ago when I first heard the term homosexual agenda. And then they added the word radical. Radical homosexual. What the hell is a homosexual? You know, we try to make jokes about it. Oh, that's a group of people that want to come into your house and redecorate for you. You know, that's a bunch of people who want to make sure you use the proper silverware when you sit down to dinner. Ha ha ha, big joke, which is mildly homophobic to begin with, the joke. That's the best we could come up with. But these son of a bitches are now to the point where they have people in positions of power. An assistant attorney general. Members of Congress. Senators, this country stinks. The system somehow that we have, and I think it's because so many progressives and liberals and those of us who would normally take these people out and beat their asses into a bloody pulp back when this stuff started, we didn't. We sat back and said, well, you know, we're children of the 60s. Here, have a hit, smoke a joint, relax, man. Don't be so anti-gay. Don't be so anti-black. Don't be so anti-Semitic. Don't be so anti-this. Come on. Hey, here, take another hit. Peace and freedom. And you know what the right-wingers were doing? These little vermin back then, 40 years ago? They were saying, yeah, you know where you can stick your joint. You know where you can stick your peace and freedom and your love beads and your peace signs. We tried. We shouldn't have tried. We should have just beat the living hell out of them. I'm serious. Whole Woodstock Nation should have rose up after the concert and just cruised across the United States from Bethel, New York, all the way across to San Diego, just beating the living Christ out of every right-winger that they found. But no, that's not what we did. And now that they're in positions of power, they want to destroy the country. They want to destroy people that don't look, sound, or smell like them. I worry about me sometimes, Kathy. I really do, because I worry about the possibility that I may reach a point where I just say, okay, that's it. And react. But this is astonishing, isn't it? I mean, don't you think it's astonishing, gentle listener? The assistant attorney general, you heard him. You heard him in his own words. of the state of Michigan who has set up a personal attack machine against this kid who has been elected the president of the student body at the University of Michigan. And this filthy piece of dreck, this assistant attorney general, says he has a right to do this. His precious freedom of speech. He is the second highest law enforcement officer in the state of Michigan, and he's doing this. And he goes on national television and brags about it? Well, I'm just, yes, of course. I'm a Michigan alum. I have a right to do this. That's my freedom of speech. He goes by the guy's house. He set up a blog site. You heard the interview. I wish I could run the clock back about 40 years and just start pounding the living hell out of some of these people. Does that sound violent? It's intended to. See you right after the break. Stick around. We have all kinds of good stuff. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. Good.
Are you a woman?
O'Donnell here on MSNBC during the breaks, and it just makes me really jealous. Man, I wish I had a television program, not for the celebrity part, but because he just played video of this insane mafia freak that is running for governor of New York, Paladino. I'm sure everybody's seen that piece of tape or that piece of video from today, too, where Paladino threatens to take out a reporter for Murdoch's newspaper, the New York Post. And what caused the dust up is that, 10 years ago, Paladino was boinking a woman and she got pregnant, and he's got a daughter that doesn't have a dad. Well, she's got a dad, but not a legal daddy, because Paladino, he just hasn't done anything. I guess he supports her. And Paladino is now accusing his opponent, Democratic opponent Cuomo, of having done the same thing, which is madness. And the reporter is saying, what's your proof? And Paladino starts to threaten his life. I mean, these are sick sons of bitches, man. I'll tell you, these Republicans, that's why I'm saying, let them win. Give it to them. Go ahead, give it. I don't see where there's any chance. Democrats are not going to go vote this November. They're just not going to. The young people, the so-called minorities, the so-called progressives, the so-called liberals, they're not going to vote. So whether or not the country will survive 2 years with people like Sharon Angle, are you kidding me? This O'Donnell woman, people like Paladino and the governors, I cannot believe the bluest of blue states, New York. And Paladino and Cuomo are in a dead heat. Here in Georgia, our senior senator, has a staffer that sent a posting, all faggots must die, It was traced back to, what's his name? I don't vote for these. Who's our senator? This crazy senator? No, not J.B. Stoner. That bastard's dead. Shambliss. Saxby Shambliss, who is just got reelected in 2008 for another 6 years. From Gordon, Oklahoma City, Mike, it seems that every few days the news reports another sad story about a gay youth committing suicide because his life has become so unbearable due to harassment and bullying. So there's the news of the college student being stalked by this religious freak, the Assistant Attorney General of Michigan, whom the Attorney General refuses to terminate. Then the U.S. Senate staffer posting "All Faggots Must Die" on a popular gay blogger site. Last week, Dan Savage and his partner Terry launched a "It Gets Better" campaign. Maybe you've seen some of those videos. Aimed at gay and lesbian youth, with the goal of preventing suicide among this vulnerable group. Within days, a vile vulture vomit religious monster launched a campaign named "It Gets Worse" to counter the program aimed at preventing gay teen suicide. I filed a complaint with YouTube about the second one. We shall see how that works out. After all that, I've been recently asking myself, is it open season on gays? And I realize the answer is no. It's always been open season on gays. There is a serious sickness in this country that the Republicans, the Christian right, the so-called conservatives, the teabaggers. It's really, really a sickness. It's massive. This guy at Village Voice, it was great. Dear white people, please stop believing a word the pus bucket Andrew Breitbart utters. He says on about 1 o'clock afternoon, the afternoon of January 20, 2009, the white American mind began to unravel. It had been pretty good run up to that point. The brains of white folks had been humming along cogently for nearly 400 years. On this continent, with little sign that any serious problem was brewing, white people, after all, had managed to invent a spiffy new form of self-government so that all white men, and eventually white women, would have a say in how white people were taxed and governed. White minds had also nearly universally occupied just about every branch of that government, and for more than two centuries had kept sole possession of the leadership of its executive branch, whose parsonage, after all, is called the White House. But when that streak was broken on January 20, 2009, and for the first time a non-white president accepted the oath of office, white America rapidly began to lose its grip. As with other forms of dementia, the signs weren't obvious at first. After the 2008 election, when former House Majority Leader Tom DeLay suggested that instead of a formal inauguration, Barack Obama should have, quote, a nice little chicken dinner and we'll save the $125 million, end quote. Black folk didn't miss the implication. References to chicken, particularly of the fried variety, have long served as a kind of code when white folks referred to black people and their gustatory preferences. And weren't many of us already accustomed to older white politicians making such gaffes anyway, huh? But who among us sensed that it was a harbinger that an entire nation was plunging into madness? Who didn't chuckle after all the first time they heard that white people had doubts that Barack Obama had been born in the United States and was therefore ineligible to be president, huh? It sounded like one of those internet stories in which some, usually white, writer does his best to prove something everyone knows to be true is actually the exact opposite. And you go along with it for a few paragraphs to see how long the writer can convince you that what you know is right, what you know is right, is actually wrong. Right? Huh? Seemed like that, didn't it? After all, what was the beef? Obama's father was Kenyan, And the kid was born in Hawaii, which is barely a part of the United States to begin with. It's only been a state since 1959. His mother was white, and after the Kenyan guy left, she married an Indonesian guy. So little Brock lived in Jakarta for a while before coming back to Hawaii to be brought up by largely his white grandparents. And that's it. Come on. This is after-school material, the kind of thing that brings you to your eye, because little half-Kenyan, half-white Barry made good. It's not the stuff of conspiracy novels. Come on. But the more you shook your head at it, the more it seemed to have taken root deep in the lizard part of the white nervous system. Obama's not an American. He says he's Christian, but he has a Muslim-sounding name. He's not black. He's not white. Is he even human? Today, Newsweek has found nearly a quarter of Americans believe that Obama is a Muslim, with barely 42% of the nation accepting his claim that he's a Christian. CNN finds that a quarter of Americans also believe that Obama was, quote, probably or definitely, end quote, born in another country. Harris polls found in an online poll that 14% of Americans believe in their hearts that President Barack Obama is the Antichrist, with nearly 25% of Republicans saying that. At least in this form, however, Satan sometimes wears a flag pin. What was going on? What's going on? What's going on? What is going on? Had decades of sucking down so much high fructose corn syrup not only made Americans incredibly obese, but also messed with white brain chemistry to the point that some sort of tipping point had occurred? Not a bad theory, but there's a simpler explanation with two parts. You want to hear it? Okay, as soon as we come back. I'm afraid of America. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of America. I'm afraid of the world.
Mr. Nice Guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Coming up next hour, some stuff. Newt Gingrich is going insane, too. He's leading the white people's nervous breakdown in this country. Anyway, so Stephen Thrasher, writing at Village Voice, says, well, you know, what's going on? Why are white people going insane? Is it the high fructose corn syrup? He says, not a bad theory, but no, there's a simpler explanation with two parts. First, for the first time in their lives, baby boomers are hard up against it economically, and white boy is becoming outnumbered, and it's got his bowels chilled with fear. In an age of diminished resources, writes Ronald Brownstein in his July National Journal article, the United States may be heading for an intensifying confrontation between the gray and the brown. The gray and the brown. The gray and the brown. That's the title, the generational mismatch. That's a polite and understated way of saying that older white people are losing their crap as they're being replaced by young brown and black kids while the economy is in the crapper. Brownstein notes that 40% of the nation's population under 18 is already non-white, with that number significantly higher in the Southwest. You can read Mexicans there. By 2003, that number of young non-whites will be an outright national majority by 2023. At the same time, the baby boomers are getting older. At 80% white, boomers have gotten pretty used to dominating nearly every field of endeavor in this country since they came of age. Politics, business, education, the arts, just about everything but MTV programming. Boomers set the national agenda in so many ways that we can forget how much the national economy and national media cater to them. Bewildered by the number of Cialis ads you see on television showing these flabby couples sitting in bathtubs? Or the way that older women are suddenly cougars? And oh yeah, you remember, boomers are getting old, but still they want to think they can get the sheets sweaty. See, boomers and their fixations and fears explain nearly everything. There's the answer, Kathy, that why we see all these ads for erectile dysfunction. It's not erectile dysfunction. It's called your ass is getting old. Oh, well. Anyway, as boomers age, they get more politically active. That's just human nature. And their 40 million strong AARP is the nation's biggest lobby. But as they try to wield that power, they're running into the growing and less white younger generations. Brownstein writes, quote, like tectonic plates, these slow-moving but irreversible forces may generate enormous turbulences as they grind against each other in the years ahead, end quote. And at some point, when tectonic plates build up enough tension, that destructive energy gets unleashed in a major earthquake, which is a pretty good metaphor for what happened on November 4th, 2008. A black man got elected president, and suddenly every aging white boomer in this country turned into Carole King. They sure as hell felt the earth move under their feet. Meanwhile, the brother moving into the White House inherited the kind of mortgage that even Wall Street executives might hesitate to call subprime. A devastated economy, two wars, neither being fought with clear goals, housing markets that resembled war zones, a health system crippled with costs, an auto industry cratering. But suddenly, in a time of crisis, but surely in a time of crisis, the country would pull together and fix this mess, right? Can you help a brother on health care? No. How about the economy? No. Financial regulatory reform? No. National security? No. Now, some black folks can be forgiven for thinking, as they watch the political drama in Washington unfold over the past 2 years, that this is just another form of the same old thing they put up with one way or another in this conflicted multiracial country. But there's another explanation. White people have simply gone sheer effing insane. That's right. I'm going to show you some examples to nail down that theory when we come back. Vaughn in Texas, I understand your rage and your concern with being too angry. Here in Texas, I have a tendency to flip off teabaggers when they drive around with their bumper stickers plastered, their bumper sticker plastered cars and their mini flag flapping on the driver's side. They piss me off. They're dumbasses, too stupid to realize they're voting against their own interests. Vaughn in Texas, yeah. Well, Vaughn, I'm going to try to explain to you. Well, I'm not going to explain it to you. I'm just going to try to share with you what Stephen Thrasher suggested writing the Village Voice, and that is that white people are going crazy, especially white people of a certain age. The ones that ride around in the little, what are those things called, the little rascal, and they get the Medicare checks and everything, and they go to teabagger rallies talking about, you know, on the one side they turn, yeah, I got this free from Social Security. Ain't that a bitch? What do you think of that? On the other hand, they're going, yeah, Sarah Palin, yeah, stop the government. If that's not insane, come up with a better definition. We'll be right back.
Self-evident, well this is evident, yeah, in the American way, you must give and I shall take, I will tell you what is moral and what's just, if I want, if I will.
help America one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So what we are doing here is getting to the root cause of this whole teabagger thing, this whole the craziness that has developed in this country. It's literally insanity, according to Stephen Thrasher at Village Voice. White America has lost its mind, he has written. Anyway, he goes on. Let's look at, to nail down the theory, white people have simply gone sheer effing insane. Let's look at some examples to nail down that theory. The Association of Community Organizers for Reform Now, that's ACORN, was a nonprofit that organized voter drives and worked for improved wages and housing for poor, mostly non-white Americans. And because of who they organized, they became a public enemy number one in the eyes of certain people not so thrilled with black folk registering to vote. Obama had once defended ACORN in a voting rights case. An ACORN offshoot was one of many Get Out the Vote enterprises employed by his primary campaign, but not his general campaign. The group's members did the same kind of community organizing that Obama had done as a young man. But throughout the 2008 election season, there was a concerted campaign to whip up hysteria about ACORN. And by November 2009, public policy polling found that more than a quarter of Americans and a majority of Republicans believed that ACORN had stolen the election for Obama. This was, of course, after the classic bit of Nixonian rat effing pulled off by a prankster named James O'Keefe. O'Keefe, a veteran at creating videos to make blacks look greedy and stupid, spent the summer driving around the country with his accomplice, Hannah Giles, making videos in ACORN offices asking for advice about avoiding tax troubles with prostitution money. You've seen the images of O'Keefe dressed as a 70s pimp, but O'Keefe had carefully edited his tapes and left out, for example, that he was decked out in college preppy clothes, not pimp wear. At least one ACORN office threw him out, and at least two knowingly played along with his ruse. The San Diego office called the cops after he left, and the Philadelphia office filed a police report. The upshot was that after his edited tapes became public, Congress quickly voted to strip ACORN of all federal funds. The organization effectively went out of business before the bill could take effect or to be thrown out in court. O'Keefe had maintained and still maintains that he was absolutely independent in his project. But in September 2009, the Village Voice reported that he'd been funded by billionaire conservative Peter Thiel and the Leadership Institute, the same outfit that funded young Grover Norquist and Karl Rove. That revelation, however, fell on deaf ears. And to this day, media outlets perpetuate O'Keefe's claim that he was operating without backing. O'Keefe got further help when his tapes were pushed by BigGovernment.com, which is run by an underhanded blowhard named Andrew Breitbart. Months later, O'Keefe was arrested by the FBI in a bizarre prank at Senator Mary Landrieu's office, in which he was either attempting to plant a wiretap or, in his explanation on Breitbart's website, just trying to find out whether her phone system worked, you know, to help her constituents reach her. Yeah, okay. The summer, Breitbart picked out another black target with another selectively edited video, this one of a USDA employee named Shirley Sherrod. His editing so mischaracterized Sherrod's words and intent that the fallout, in the words of New York Times writer Frank Rich, quote, could not only smear an innocent woman, but make every national institute that touched the story look bad. The White House, the NAACP, and the news media were all soiled by this episode, end quote, Frank Rich. But hey, politics is hardball, right? We've had rat effers like Breitbart and O'Keefe around forever. What's different this time, however, is just how easily the lies and distortions of the rat effers are being soaked up by the damaged crania of this country's drooling white masses. What sort of senility is softening up the frontal lobes of America's pale faces that they can't see through the black hatred of a wanker like Breitbart. Out west, meanwhile, his home prices dropped faster than a burst piñata. An easy scapegoat was found. Mexicans! Long the scourge of aging white folks who don't seem to understand the economics behind their cheap groceries. Immigrants from Mexico, Guatemala, and other sweltering southern destinations became enemies of the American dream. Suddenly it was open season on brown-skinned fruit pickers and seamstresses. Arizona passed SB 1070, a law that would force its residents to carry identity papers with them at all times. And jurisdictions around the nation are salivating to copy suit. Back east, meanwhile, we have our own brown-skinned devil, the Muslim. When an imam who had done diplomatic work for the Bush administration put together plans to build a Muslim version of a Jewish community center a few blocks from Ground Zero, white people freaked out. At Landmarks Preservation Commission meetings, White House wives from Staten Island suddenly took a great interest in preserving mid-19th century cast iron facades and the architecture of Daniel Badger, all to try to keep New Yorkers from taking swimming lessons in the same building where Muslims would have a place to pray. They argued that Muslims could never understand the impact of 9/11, could never understand the concept of Ground Zero being holy ground, as if a building that would contain prayer services was somehow less holy than an outlet for betting on horses and stuffing dollar bills into G-strings, which was right around the proposed site. But by now, those sorts of distinctions are nearly impossible to make for a white mind so cluttered by decay. Race was always a tough one for white people to deal with, but now the backflip some people are doing over it requires a scorecard. There may be no better example than Laura Schlesinger and the great white outpouring of support following the bizarre flame-out of a radio show. It all started with the most incomprehensible of happenings. A black woman would, out of all reason, call the Dr. Laura show seeking advice? The sister called Schlesinger to ask how to handle her white husband's white friends, who sometimes say racist things that she's uncomfortable with, including using the N-word. Dr. Laura immediately went to, well, a lot of blacks voted for Obama simply because he was half black. She told the caller not to NAACP me by taking her out of context. She said the N-word is fine to say because black guys use it all the time. She then wrote the caller off as having a chip on your shoulder and declared, we got a black man as president and we have more complaining about racism than ever. She told the caller that if you're that hypersensitive about color and don't have a sense of humor, don't marry out of your race. The caller, Schlesinger thought, was suffering from hypersensitivity, which is being bred by black activists. Her discomfort with the word, the N-word, Schlesinger said, was just another attempt to demonize whites hating blacks. The reaction from white America, who clearly had not remembered to take the Thorazine that morning, was overwhelming. Who, if not Laura Schlesinger, should say the N-word with impunity? Schlesinger announced on Larry King Live, however, that in order to regain her First Amendment rights of free speech, she would be canceling her show. Constitutional experts are still trying to parse that one. Sarah Palin then rushed to Schlesinger's side, tweeting in her inimitable style, "Don't retreat, reload." Palin, we can only assume, wanted Schlesinger to utter the N-word as often as she wanted. Perhaps the two of them, having both quit their jobs, can get together and put on a road show, starting with Zip Coon and finishing with a rousing rendition of Carry Me Back to Old Virginia. White folks used to shy away from candidates who emailed pictures of a woman being raped by a horse, didn't they? Can you just see the scene down at the Republican Party headquarters? Well, except for sending out those emails of horse rape and those other emails of N-word jokes and also fathering a love child. This guy, Carl Palladino, is just our kind of guy, except for the other stuff. But you know, now, try, if your cortex is not too far gone, try to reel things back a couple of years. Imagine, if you can, Barack Obama surging in the polls in 2008. If it were known, he'd sent out emails of a white woman getting it from a horse. If he'd revealed that he had a 10-year-old love child, and if he revealed he was threatening to take a baseball bat to federal employees. It's really hard to conjure that up, isn't it? Huh? Isn't that hard? And there, right there, more than anything, demonstrates just how much the white brain has become Swiss cheese in the last couple of trips around the sun. We'll be right back.
I just gotta wonder what my daddy was doing. If he'd seen the way they turned his dream around. I've gotta go by what he told me. Try to tell the truth and stand your ground. Don't let the bastards get you down.
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 Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Into the distance, without black. Stretch to the point of no turning back.
10 before the hour. All right, finishing this up, I just thought this was great. I really did. Stephen Thrasher writing at the Village Voice about white people have just absolutely lost their minds. Absolutely. He says, by now, just about everyone has seen the precious moment in MTV's 1996 Sex in the 90s when Christine O'Donnell made this monumental discovery about masturbation. Quote,
if he already knows what pleases him and he can please himself, then why am I in the picture?
End quote. 14 years later, doesn't really seem to be dwelling on the still unmarried O'Donnell that she's not
in the picture
and might never be. But apparently that's not going to stop her from waging war against the sex lives of everyone else. Is there any hope? Can the white mind be cured? And what, other than a massive lobotomy, can salvage it? It's hard to imagine a cure when at this point the patient doesn't seem to realize that he's sick. Rush Limbaugh, for example, has declared that it's black Americans who have a problem. If there is a cure, it likely won't come from Barack Obama. There are those who say that this president invited our current derangement by not being commanding enough. They say he should have invaded Franklin D. Roosevelt, who famously said before ever being elected, quote, I should like to have it said of my first administration that in it, the forces of selfishness and of lust for power met their match. I should like to have it said of my second administration that in it, these forces met their master. But Obama, if Obama ever referred to being the master of anything, he'd scare white people more than he already does. Glenn Beck is one of the downright terrified and has said that Obama has, quote, a deep-seated hatred of white people or the white culture, end quote. What makes you wonder, has Beck really not seen Obama in his golf attire? In the end, it goes beyond Obama and the current economy and is really about the inevitable demographic future of America, those coming Browns and the Grays. They will, one way or another, have to learn to get along. It is true, as Mr. Brownstein says, that the graying boomers will have to pay for the education, health, and welfare of becoming Browns. They'll be stingy about it, they'll scream about it, but they have no choice but to do it. After all, who but the hordes of young Browns will be around to work when the grays retire? To pay taxes, to fund their Medicare and Social Security, and how will they earn enough money to finance boomers in their retirement if they're not well-educated and healthy? To do this dance effectively. the white American mind is going to have to focus and prioritize. Maybe, just maybe, it might be required to act with a little ever-loving sanity now and again. Thanks to Stephen Thrasher at Village Voice. White America has lost its mind. I tend to agree with that. Only I would qualify it by saying white America over a certain age. I have friends who are under that age. I have children who are under that age. And they look at these crazy baby boomer teabagging white people in a way that gives me encouragement. Of course, they're my kids. What do you expect, right? They may be adults and have their own families, but... And I'm not saying that they have been that influenced by me. They're independent lot, all of them. Right, Gabby? So, I think it's over a certain age. White people over... I would, and I happen to be in that age group. But I'm not referring to myself here, and I'm not referring to you, gentle listener. If you are tuned into this program, other than you trolls who... Oh, let's see, what's Malloy saying? Quick, record this so we can get it to somebody. And I really appreciate it when you do that. I love picking up the new listeners, these right-wing dumbasses. It's great fun. But for the most part, people listening to this program are people who are not insane, white people who are not insane. Now, let me rephrase that. For the most part, the white people who listen to this program are not insane. We have lots of people of color who listen to this program. But the white folks, for the most part, are not crazy. They may be dealing with their own form of bigotries and prejudices, but they're not insane. It's the people who don't listen to this program that are crazier than loons. Not that this program has anything to do with sanity or insanity. It's just a self-selecting situation. The insane people know who to turn to because they are scared. It is a matter of browns and grays. It really is. You look at these white people that show up at these teabagger places. Like I said earlier, they sit there in their little rascal Medicare-paid scooters. They go, yeah, sir. Goddamn right. We want our country back. Yeah. You want it back from what? Well, from the, you know, him. Well, he doesn't own it. It's the white people that run Congress. The president proposes. The Congress disposes. Do you know what that means, you dumb, white, stupid person? Do you know what that means?
We want our country back. You know, he's a Muslim.
Dear God. Well, I've got the craziest white person on in America when we come back, and that would be Newt Gingrich. Before that, though, I've got a letter here. I think I'll do this first, maybe second. It's from Anonymous, and it's an apology. Or no, it's an I'm ashamed letter. And then Newt, and also a couple things to say about this preacher out here at the New Birth Church of Tomorrow, this guy who has been demonizing gay folk while he has sex with young men. We'll be back. Stay with us. Don't go away. 7 past the hour. A couple of days ago, I got the strangest email from someone who insists on being anonymous, made it very clear. I assume it's a he. And I've been thinking about reading it on the air. I got it about, today's, what is the day, the 29th? It has been, well, this evening, this is the 29th, it's been the 29th all day today, right? I got this on the 20th, and I've been holding on to it, so I'm going to share it with you now. Subject line says, "Yes, I'm ashamed." Dear Mike, first let me say that I've written to you on a couple of occasions, but I'm using a different email to be anonymous for a couple of reasons. While I am anxious to get this information out, I'm not anxious to be public myself yet. In addition, I'm ashamed of what you're about to read. I'm frankly scared of your ire at this because this email is against every bone in my body. It offends every bit of morality I have in me. I expect, if there is a purgatory, to spend extra time there based upon what I've done. I expect a huge repair job on my karma after I get out of this. Here goes. I work in a small law firm. I went to work for a small practice a couple of years ago. The person I work for had his practice undergo a large shift, a large change in the area of practice. The general and commercial litigation dried up, and this person ended up doing a lot of foreclosure work. In a word, it's disgusting. Since I have to do this to make ends meet, to support myself and my family, I have little I can do. In doing this, I have worked for banks as they foreclosed on people's homes. I have seen firsthand the abuses the banks engage in. I have seen firsthand the practice of, quote, creating delinquencies, end quote, by refusing borrowers' payments, returning them, causing the accounts to go past due, and then foreclosing. By the time the lawsuit gets to me, the damage is done. In addition to foreclosures, I have seen these banks, the same banks that received hundreds of billions of funds from TARP, from tax dollars that comes from the money middle-class persons have sent to the government in the form of hard-earned tax dollars, only to have these scum-sucking, putrid banks do this. Hypocrisy is not a strong enough word to describe what they do. Theft is not strong enough to describe it. The only thing I can come up with to describe it, to give people a taste of what's really going on, to make people cringe like they should, to feel the queasy gizzard they should feel, is to call it financial genocide. Because that is exactly what these banks are doing. They are intentionally killing the middle class. The class of people that you mentioned, vis-a-vis Nader, out of which comes revolt, movements, and revolutions. I can't tell you how many times I've wanted to get up and leave, to turn my back on these vultures. But I'm just not in the situation to do that. So the only thing I can do is to pull the information together, to point out what is public information, but what people may not know. So I'm including it in this email. I have added links to press releases from the Attorney General of New York, from the office of the Attorney General of New York. It names these gutter law firms who are deceiving courts, trying to lie to judges and defrauding regular people. I want people to know that it is these same purveyors of financial genocide who are hiring these gutter-ass law firms to go after the same people whose taxpayers have bailed their effing GD asses out. It is with this information that I hope people can begin to fight back. These so-called firms should be shut down, put out of business. These so-called lawyers should have to pay back every dime they've stolen from consumers with their fraudulent, disgusting actions. Finally, all I can say is, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I now do some of this stuff. I'm sorry that I'm part of the problem. All I can say is this. Please know that I hate it. Please know that I go days without sleep over what I do. All I can do is beg people to accept my apology. Thanks, Anonymous. And then the writer lists five links to websites. One is, a couple of them are New York government websites. Three of them are. One is New York Times. And another one is an information website about how to stop debt collectors. And I will probably post this at our website, but I found the email interesting. And you know the weirdest part? I have a suspicion who wrote this. I really do. I'm not going to speculate on the air, but I have an idea. I really do. Who wrote this? And if he, and it is a he, if he's listening, you know, I'm not going to make a moral judgment on your position as to what you are doing regarding being a part of this this machine that is grinding people up. That's, you know, you make comments about your karma, or you indicate a fear of purgatory. If you really were Catholic, you would know that I think the church declared purgatory null and void. So I think you were using it as a figure of speech. But, you know, the moral dilemma that you might find yourself in, that is, I'm not going to make any judgment on that at all. I can't, because I would have to put into balance, or anyone who judges you on this would have to put into balance what you feel your obligations to take care of your family and yourself, and your obligations to continue to work for, do contract work for law firms that you know are breaking, if not the letter of the law, certainly the intent, the spirit of the law. It's a difficult choice, and I mean, what can I say? I'm no philosopher. I'm not going to say I hope you choose wisely, although I hope you choose wisely. What has happened to so many people? This is a story I think is yet to be told. The suffering. A couple of newspapers have made some efforts in putting the stories out, individual stories of families who have slipped into foreclosure, really through no fault of their own. I realize the right wing has tried to paint this as a bunch of Acorn-sponsored black families who, through their tremendous power, disrupted the entire global financial service. You know, this is what right-wingers do. It's just amazing that low-income families, read black families, were able to derail the entire financial service services, when in fact it is the putrefaction of capitalism that's doing this and continues to do it. I mean, these crises continue to go on. I heard something on the news the other day here in Atlanta. Once again, there are banking organizations, financial service organizations, that are starting to finance homes with no money down again. They don't give a goddamn. They couldn't care less. Capitalist, especially capitalism where it concerns money manipulation, they don't care. Whatever they need to do to make as much profit, blood money, out of people who are only trying to live their lives, they will do. So, Anonymous, I hope you, and only you can, I hope you solve your moral dilemma. I really do. It is one. I know it's a moral dilemma for you, but I think the bigger question is how much longer do Americans allow a predatory economic and now political system to continue when it's clear where it's taking us? That's the question I have. We'll be right back.
to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
We were young together. We were on the
21 past the hour. Hey, what happened to all those color-coded terror threats? Remember, they're so popular back in the early years of the Bush crime family. Whatever happened to those? With Ashcroft. Ashcroft would come on the television from Moscow or someplace and talk about, well, you know, we've discovered another one, this one in Miami. Whatever happened? Anytime I'm going through an airport, I will hear periodic announcements that Department of Homeland Security wishes to remind you that the condition of the terror threat condition is orange. Of course, they've been saying that for 10 years, so I have no idea what the hell they're talking about. But whatever happened to that? Do you remember the candy-colored tangerine flake baby, whatever the hell it was, that it was like a roll of Lifesavers? Remember that?
Yeah, with a great big hole in the middle in the security. It used to be down there on the screen. All the time on television.
Oh, no. Well, that was
on
Fox.
The cable. No, well, it was all of them for
really?
A while, and then Fox kept it up through the entirety, I think, of the Bush administration. It was just sort of like, be afraid,
well,
coming.
The domestic terrorism, terrorism now, apparently, according to Newt Gingrich, is not necessarily from only from the sneaking Muslims who are furtively moving from bridge support to building doorway to roadbed to, the sneaking, bomb-throwing guy who has 8 tons of fissile material strapped to his body. The real threat to America, to our way of life, the Muslim. According to Newt, it's not just that guy who wants to blow everything up. No. There's another threat. Gene Robinson wrote about it a couple of days ago in his column in the Washington Post. According to Newt, American judges are trying to impose harsh Islamic law in their courtrooms, and we have to beware. You know, the lashings and the stonings and the beheadings. Did you know that? Did you know that it's coming to a courtroom near you? According to Newt Gingrich, a plot is afoot so that if you don't pay your parking tickets and they issue a warrant and you have to go to court, normally you might have to pay the tickets and pay a $200 fine. Not any longer. Now you have to pay the parking tickets, and then they will, according to Newt, if we don't stop this, then you'll be sentenced to X number of lashes in the public square. Huh? You didn't know that? Remember back during the so-called Values Voter Summit, this collection of Christian psychopaths who get together every year, and Newt was one of the featured speakers. He issued this thunderous call for action against an imminent threat that, as Gene Robinson points out, exists only in his fevered imagination. Newt Gingrich has an imagination that is not fevered. It is riddled with disease. His imagination, I've never had the experience of watching a guy from the beginning to the end of his political career. I first met Newt when he ran for the Georgia General Assembly 30 years ago, whenever it was. I watched as Sean Hannity attached himself to Newt like a lamprey when Newt's political comet took off. I've seen the guy go from a economics professor at the University of West Georgia, or at the time it was called West Georgia College, to the Speaker of the United States House of Representatives, to a basket case, a guy whose grip on reality is sliding slowly out of his hands. It's incredible. I've never seen during the time when he went into his wife's hospital room immediately after she had cancer surgery and informed her that he He was not interested in the alimony payments or whatever that the court had ordered him. I don't remember the exact details because I was so taken by the fact that Newt Gingrich would walk into his soon-to-be ex-wife's hospital room immediately subsequent to cancer surgery and start bitching at her about, well, I don't like to pay this. Newt Gingrich is slime. Oh, that's wrong. That gives slime a bad name. Newt Gingrich is just, I don't know. He is the result of some crazy conjurer up in the mountains of North Georgia, one of those snake-handling freaks who said, I think I'll create a demon and loose it on America. Amen! And out popped Newt Gingrich. Some more of this when we come back, because Newt has an idea about how to stop courts in this country, all the way down to the municipal level, all the way up to the Supreme Court. Every single court is under threat that it may impose Sharia law, Islamic law. And Newt has a solution. Yes, Newt always has a solution.
They eat the bread of sorrow.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. So Newt Gingrich has discovered a horrific threat to the American way of life. And that is that American judges are getting ready, from your local municipal court judge who decides whether or not you really owe that water bill, all the way up to the Supreme Court. They are getting ready to impose strict, harsh Sharia, Islamic law, lashings, stonings, beheadings. Thanks to Eugene Robinson at the Washington Post for letting us know about this. The speech before the crazy Christian so-called Values Voter Summit a couple of weeks ago. That's when this all came out. It's coming. Newt says that we should have a federal law that says Sharia law cannot be recognized by or practiced by any court in the United States. He wants a federal law. Now, what gang of political crazy people are the ones that are always talking about, well, you know, federal government pass all these laws there, but you're blah, blah, blah. Yeah, right. Newt says we have to halt the insidious encroachment of Sharia law, and we have to halt it here and now. Not only did he talk a couple of weeks ago before the Values Voter Summit, but he also, back in July, talked before the American Enterprise Institute. And when he gave a speech there, he went on at great length about the supposed Sharia menace, which he sees as part of a, his word, stealth campaign to impose Islam on all of us. Sick bastard. Newt Gingrich, this guy, like I said, you know, watching him go from college professor to psychopath has been, in a way, amusing. In another way, there have been a couple of times when Newt Gingrich, when he was at the pinnacle of political power, of course, he always blows it, so to speak. He has no sense of the bigger picture. Everything is about Newt. I remember when Newt declared, more or less openly, that he was here to lead Western civilization back from the brink of utter destruction. But that damn Bill Clinton in the White House was standing in the way. So while Newt was boinking an intern on the Agriculture Committee, subcommittee in the House, he said he was going to go after Bill Clinton, who was boinking, well, you remember. Newt knows does not have the word hypocrisy in his dictionary, nor does he have the word or the phrase, I am crazier than a loon, in his dictionary. Anyway, he said before the American Enterprise Institute, quote, stealth jihadis. Ooh. Oh, I mean, just those two words together. Stealth jihadis. Mom! Stealth jihadis, he said, use political, cultural, societal, religious, intellectual tools. Violent jihadis use violence. Oh, really? End quote. But he went on to say, but in fact, they're both engaged in jihad. And they're both seeking to impose the same end state, which is to replace Western civilization with a radical imposition of Sharia. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Now, if you have not been in a cave for the past 25 or 30 years, you know that the religious group that is really trying to impose its strictures on American society and the globe, it's been trying on the globe for the past 1,500 years, but the one really trying to take over our legal system is fundamentalist Christianity, not Islam. The Christians are the ones who continually talk about destroying the classroom, all that science and math hog snot, and replacing it with biblical teaching, the Christian Bible. They'll allow the Jews in a little bit, but only insofar as the prophecies of the Messiah are included, you see, because the New Testament fulfills that prophecy if you happen to believe this garbage. But anyway, the cult that is trying to destroy everything American is not Islam. It is not Judaism. It's not even the crazy people in the Mormon religion. It is fundamentalist Christians, both Catholic and Protestant. You know it. I know it. Newt Gingrich knows it. But this is his, the red herring, the dog that didn't bark, the bloody shirt. Call it what you want. This is also, Newt thinks, his way back into political power. Stealth jihadis use political, cultural, societal, religious, intellectual tools. Blah! In the July speech in front of the American Enterprise Institute, Gingrich painted liberals, American liberals, as a bunch of fellow travelers to the jihadis, the stealth jihadis who want to impose Sharia law in our court system. The liberals, fellow travelers. Now, you have to be over the age of, 55 or 60 to understand what the term fellow traveler means. Well, okay, you can be young and have read in your college textbook what it meant. But for those of us who remember how that term was thrown about, even though the memories are dim and kind of sepia-toned because it was so long ago, and I have to remember my mother standing at the ironing board saying to me, well, you know, this Eugene McCarthy guy is crazy. What, Mama? What? Gingrich painted liberals as a bunch of fellow travelers. Gingrich said in the American Enterprise Institute speech, quote, how we don't have some kind of movement in this country on the left that understands that Sharia is a direct mortal threat to virtually every value that the left has is really one of the more interesting historical questions, end quote. Really? That's an interesting historical question? Gee, Newt, you are just so goddamn intelligent. You're just so beyond me. I have a hard time even understanding your sentences. Really? Oh, I'll be darned. As Gene Robinson writes, where to begin to answer this freak? He didn't say freak. I say freak. Robinson says there is no left-to-center movement dedicated to fighting the steady, stealthy insinuation of Sharia into America's legal system because no such thing is happening. Oh, my God.
Gingrich invents an enemy and then demands to know why others haven't sallied forth to slay it. This guy is really insane. But then all Republicans are at this point. I think when Republican political theory was created, a poison pill was inserted where at some point in the evolution or devolution of this sick, degenerate political philosophy, the poison pill would dissolve and its poison would flood the Republican Party and all of its members, both elected and the geeks that walk around and say, yeah, I'm going to vote Republican. Yeah, I really like that Paladino guy in New York. Yeah, I really like Sharon Engel. I love all these people. I like the, O'Donnell over there in New Hampshire. God, I like them all. They're real Americans. That's what that little blue pill did. Poing! Ah! It's finally exploded. And Newt Gingrich is one of the first casualties. Of course, Newt Gingrich has one of the biggest mouths on the right. I have to admit, he makes the other right-wingers sound stupider than they really are. Because Newt can. He was a college professor, you know. He can put together coherent sentences. He can, when pressed, speak in paragraphs, even. How we don't have, he said, some kind of movement in this country on the left that understands that Sharia is a direct mortal threat to virtually every value that the left has is really one of the more interesting historical questions, end quote. Really? You know, I don't know why there's not a movement on the left that understands that a yet-to-be-discovered bacterium that exists somewhere in the deepest trenches of the Pacific, if loosed upon American culture will eat through all the books in the libraries. Why hasn't somebody on the left brought that up? Huh? Gingrich is insane. He is insane. Of course, his purpose is really political. He doesn't give a tinker's damn about any of this stuff. It's just that Newt has become a little asterisk, a little footnote of history. He never did get to the presidency when he had the third most powerful job in U.S. government. He dropped back 10 yards and punted. And Newt is a failure. He's a class A. He is a classic definition of a complete monumental failure. So he's trying to come back. If Muslim bashing gets a rise out of people, and it does, then he's going to go that way. Watch out! They're coming! The Sharias are coming! Oh, my God! I came here tonight. I got the feeling of something right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. In my ongoing assault against religious hypocrisy, if that's not redundant, I would be remiss in not bringing up Pastor or Bishop, I should say. Yeah, he's a bishop. Bishop Eddie Long, who has one of the best scams going. He
I mean, just a complete scam artist. He has 25 or 30,000 members of his New Birth Church here in Metro Atlanta. This is a guy that's being investigated because, you know, all the money that people contribute that go to the various ministries go to Eddie's Bentleys and Rolls Royces and the boys that he strikes up relationships with and then seduces. And this is a man who is an ardent homophobe, as is so often the case, isn't it? I mean, my God, not too long ago, old Bishop Eddie led a march here in Atlanta demanding that marriage be sanctified as being only between a man and a woman. And in the meantime, he was performing his own commitment ceremonies with a bunch of young men, not together, but individually. One of the young men who have filed a lawsuit against him, according to the Associated Press, the lawsuit is Eddie coerced him into a sexual relationship, told a TV interviewer, the young man did, that he loved the pastor and considered him a father figure. But he also called him a predator and a monster. His name is Jamal Paris, and he was interviewed by Channel 5 in Atlanta, WAGA. Jamal Paris said, I loved him. I'm always going to have love for the things he taught us, but how he left us hurt. But how he left us hurt worse than anything I ever felt in my life. The man turned his back on us when he had no more need for us. That's not a father. That's a predator. Jamal Paris described some of what happened. Here's what he said to Channel 5 here in Atlanta. Quote, I cannot get the sound of his voice out of my head. And I cannot forget the smell of his cologne. And I cannot forget the way he made me cry many nights when I drove in his cars on the way home. I'm not able to take enough showers to wipe the smell of him off my body. End quote. Woo! When a reporter for Channel 5 here in Atlanta first reached Jamal Paris outside a convenience store in Colorado, the young man at first was reluctant to speak, and then he told WAGA that Long exploited the young man's dreams for a father figure in exchange for sexual favors. And during services at his, quote, church, end quote, last Sunday, Bishop Eddie turned to biblical terms to portray himself as an underdog. Yea, and behold! This is warfare. They are attacking me. Oh, my God. I feel like David against Goliath. But I got five rocks, and I haven't thrown one yet. That's what he said last Sunday. In the interview with Channel 5, Jamal Paris said Bishop Eddie, quote, manipulated us from childhood under the guise of providing a fatherly influence. Jamal was referring to himself and the other accusers, Maurice Robinson, Anthony Flagg, and Spencer LeGrand. They're in their 20s now, but were 17 and 18 when they had sexual relationships with Long, according to the lawsuit. Jamal Paris said, this was our father and we loved him. Jamal went on to say, that man, referring to Bishop Eddie, cannot look me in the eye now and tell me we did not live this pain that he's denying. And then he addressed a comment directly to Long. He said, you are not a man. You are a monster. It's pretty astonishing. In the black church, homosexuality is acknowledged as something that is there, but in not just the black church, but also in black culture, something that does exist, but we don't talk about it, see? We just don't talk about it. People who do that are on the down low. You know, be quiet. Don't say anything about it, because we have this image we have to maintain of manly, testosterone-loaded, aggressive. You know, that's how white people have painted us for the past 350 years, so we have the image. But homosexuality in the black community is the same as it is in any community. I mean, nobody has an exclusive franchise on heterosexuality. They just don't. People are people. The problem arises when you get some predatory, sick individual, like in this instance, Bishop Eddie, who uses his position, uses his power, uses his rhetorical devices to convince people. I don't care whether it's a Catholic priest molesting little boys and girls or this freak who goes after young men under the guise of wanting to protect them when all he wants to do is sleep with them. Well, sleep is a euphemism. Have sex with them. Rather than just declaring himself and saying, yeah, I am what I am. It sounds like what some Popeye would say. I am what I am. And if you don't like it, that's your problem. But to do this once again, a screaming, drooling, dribbling homophobe, someone who would condemn other people to a hideous life of shame, while at the same time, he takes his pleasure where he can get it. That to me is disgusting. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Are you a woman?